Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by, as always, by the host with the most, the difference maker, the Hall of Famer, Mr. Tony Sager. Tony, how are you, sir?
Great, Sean. Great to be back on with you.
Fantastic. Great to have you here. And we've also joined by a very special guest, Mr. Scott Aldridge, author of Visible Ops Cybersecurity, Enhancing Your Cybersecurity Posture with Practical Guidance. Mr. Aldridge, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks, Sean. And thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me here today.
Absolutely. So we've got a jam-packed episode. We want to dive into some of the methodology, some of the framework that you've described, Scott, here, and really get into, you know, how we're thinking about organizational approaches and thinking about limited resources, prioritization, and sustainability of a visible ops methodology. So, Scott, when we're thinking, and can you describe necessarily, one, both your experience, give us, you know, an introduction to you, and then really what led to you publishing the book?
Sure. Appreciate that question. I started back in information technology services back in the early 2000s. We kind of spun off a group out of a network integration business. MicroAge actually was our orientation, our relationship, and spun out kind of our advanced networking group that became our IP services, managed services team. Early 2000s, wasn't a lot of MSPs out there, certainly not MSSPs. So that's kind of how we grew up, you know, over the last, you know, 23, 4 years, really reinventing ourselves and maturing our operations. Somewhere around the mid-2000s, some of my best and brightest seem to care a lot about certain IT processes or things around how we manage our documentation, our change, and all those kinds of things. And so we partnered up with some different organizations. Tripwire Software, their CTO, and my CTO at the time became good buddies and started talking about, you know, kind of this idea of, you know, what really are best practices in IT and do they really exist as compared to other sectors like manufacturing, where, you know, have dimming and, you know, the QA expertise that as they've matured over the years. So it was really interesting. How do we look at IT? You know, Mike does it one way, Tom does another way, Sarah does it another way. What really is the best way? And so that launched us into some roundtables and studies and research. We partnered with Gartner, and then we had Red Hat and HP and a bunch of different companies jump in and really did a bunch of research. And we launched it into the IT Process Institute. That was the foundational part of it. So I was a founder, my CTO, Kevin Baer, Gene Kim, George Spafford, a few people like that. So that was kind of the initial genesis of the IT Process Institute and really looking at what really are best practices. So to bring that forward a little bit, shortly thereafter, with some of a big study that we did, we started to realize that a lot of the organizations that were doing research at the time were showing that about 70 to 80% of all IT failure was correlated to some unapproved, untested, unauthorized change. So they kind of had this working thesis that, hey, if we do a really good job managing change, we're going to kind of knock a home run out of availability and our downtime, and we're going to get a lot of really good metrics that are going to happen. And in order to do good change, you need to follow some other processes. And so that's where some of the research kicked in, and we learned about this thing called the ITIL. Back then, you could Google it, pages after page, you'd find nothing. Today, you put in ITIL, you'll find right at the top of the list, you know, it's everywhere. So we were one of the very early adopters of ITIL and started propagating that, married it to some of the methodologies of how we really managed IT, critical IT assets and systems, caring a lot about change management. And you can't do really good change if you don't have good configuration management. And then you also need good release management to feed into change. And those three become kind of a closed loop process: config, change, and release management practices. And we love the way that ITIL kind of described them. Very descriptive, though. So when we ordered the ITIL 2, it was kind of a funny morning. It landed in our conference room. Three of us opened it up like a, you know, Christmas morning present, and it read like the telephone book. It's like the process of the process of the process. We're like, how on earth would you start to implement these things and make sense of them practically into your organization? And that's where we kind of went into a sojourn of about a year and a half, 2 years, and the development of the Living, Breathing, Visible Ops handbook. That handbook became wildly popular, still sells to this day, because those foundational practices around config, change, and release are as true today as they've ever been. That book went on to sell, you know, over 300,000 copies plus, and wildly popular. There was a series, Visible Ops Security came out at one point. Of course, we didn't call it cybersecurity back in the late 2000s. And then, of course, the Visible Ops Private Cloud book that came out. So that's really where it came. And IP services has always kind of been the living, breathing, working version of Visible Ops as we've matured over the years. And the IT process is really out there trying to, you know, really, you know, promote best practices in IT. Interesting today, fast forward, literally, still seeing research and articles and working with organizations that really don't have those foundational IT processes in place. And so just like I was speaking about, change management is so important to good IT uptime and availability and lack of downtime, those kinds of things. We've learned that kind of almost a riddle is that no security breach ever happens without a change or a need for a change. It's kind of a riddle. So the idea is that good change management practices, married to good configuration management, release management practices, really become very critical foundational controls that you need to have really good processes and good rigor around in how you manage, because that will ultimately not only drive great IT performance, as proven by the studies and the research, but also enhances your cybersecurity posture immensely. Now, that's not obviously a one thing fix all. There's a lot more to it, but that is the kind of history and a little bit the genesis of the ITPI and how the books were developed and why we care a lot about the original, you know, config, change, and release processes.
Yeah, Scott, that what a fascinating journey. And I think, you know, I sort of bumped into that work, that body of work, you know, with the Visible Ops Handbook. And, you know, so I come at this as a security wonk, right? A long time thinker about security, and watched kind of my main observation point was the Defense Department. And it was, anyway, I watched several cycles of this. The security guys sit with the ops guys, or the security guys sit in a different building from the ops guys and kind of, you know, telescopically look over their shoulders. And I kind of, what is the right answer? And I could never figure this out. But as we started to mature our thinking about vulnerability management, vulnerability analysis, you know, that's where I come from. And I realized, oh my gosh, most of this problem is really about IT management. It's not about security. It's about knowing what you have, you know, the visibility of assets, you know, these sort of foundational problems, as you described, right? That if you don't have that, frankly, not much else seems to matter. So I think that's, you know, you mentioned some of those names were the, you know, names I've started to bump into, and there's discussion with them and folks like Mark Allers and others around this sort of notion of cyber defense as the machinery. But I also got a big kick. I'm watching Sean smile because, you know, this is like you're speaking his language, right, Sean? This process management, because you're the speaker of this to our company. Anything about, you know, your observations as a guy who's kind of has to make it work inside a security company?
Yeah, no, I think it's actually, I love the metrics piece because it is absolutely telling, right? There's either an instigation necessarily of a change element that you've not necessarily planned for, accounted, mitigated, controlled in any way, shape, or form that then hits necessarily the organization and then causes ultimately these, I'll call it the wide eyes as to, we never approved this. We didn't know this was happening. It's so shadow in terms of what we've seen. And, you know, we use shadow IT and, you know, the shadow business process type elements to influence that, right? You know, we were in the dark about these things, and now we're trying to shine a light, and now we see the shadow. And it has me chuckling because it's one of the things that is missed. I see so many, Scott, in certain areas where we'll focus on the technology. You miss the business process. We'll focus on the business process. We miss the technology. And it's a combination play that, and I think the ITIL has many, many fine processes that can integrate, right? That become part of a resiliency plan. that you can then start to strategize, because you need that necessarily. I need it as an intake in order to understand, to Tony's point, asset, distribution, user, and, you know, think of all of these pillars necessarily that are holding up our risk ability to address risk in that space. So, yeah, Scott, I'd love to get your thoughts as to, you know, we see the struggle and we want to help organizations, give them the path. But not many people take it. I don't know if it's too complex, which I don't think it is. Maybe we're just not paying attention.
Yeah, really good points. And to Tony's point, you know, we really, in the older construct of security, the mantra was silo. You know, security can't integrate with other things because it needs to be separate. That keeps it a separation of duty and control. And I think that comes from some of the older, you know, Kobe Koso type framework thinking. And so the truth is, as we've learned over the years and the studies have proven, is that the more we collapse operations and security together, the more visibility. Imagine visible operations, visible ops. We have more, you know, visibility to the operational and security things, and they're integrated. And we're seeing that in, of course, DevSecOps as well, right? Where we're bringing it together in our developmental processes as well. And then to your point, Sean, where you're talking about what we call kind of the shiny new object or shiny new toy effect, right? We get enamored, and now AI is the latest, right? And it's one, there's awesome things about AI. Speak about that in my book, drill down on it. And I think people should be embracing and using AI for all the good of cyber, where it can be employed and used. However, it's not the be all, at all, fix all for your cybersecurity posture. And quite frankly, AI, as we're seeing a lot of things being, you know, awareness and writing about the threat that AI in and of itself presents. So just because it's AI, it's almost like people are leapfrogging over, you know, good cybersecurity practice because it's AI, it's got to be good. And what threats and vulnerabilities is it opening up to your organization? So without getting ahead of ourselves, you guys both make some really good insights and points that really we're all singing off the same sheet of music here. Yeah.
Scott, when I was, with every sentence, I usually implicitly confessed to my naivety about IT operations. Again, growing up as a cyber wonk. And I remember kind of a groundbreaking moment for me was, which actually led to the TI's critical security controls, by the way, was my group at NSA is a byproduct. I ran things like the red teams and blue teams and all the security testers for defense. And got permission to release to the public in June of 2001, an unforgettable day for me, the NSA security guides to the public through NSA.gov. So that was a major culture change for NSA. And that completely by accident started my public speaking career, Sean, by the way, because people would like ask, and I was the only one who, you know, would go out of the building, right, to talk about these things. But what happened, and the real revelation to me, Scott, leading back to your theme, was people would say, well, that's great. Thanks, Tony, for being out here and, you know, helping the public, and, you know, public, private, rah, rah, rah. But what should I do first? What do you recommend I do first? And they go, what? And I'd say, we'll go to NIST and there's thousands of pages to read over here, and go over here and there's thousands of pages. And they go, yeah, but my boss has a limited attention span. I have a small budget. I only have one person on staff, right? And I realized, again, naively, that I'd spent my life pointing out the flaws of other human beings with no responsibility to fix it. These are the questions of the person who owns the problem, like a Sean, right? They have to deal with this. Next dollar, right? Boss's attention span and all that. And the first thing that came out of my mouth, this was a gut reaction without much thinking, was visibility. I would focus all my attention on visibility. And that was not a random response because, you know, one of the oddities of my career as a lifelong defender was growing up inside an intelligence agency. So watching how the nation state fight happens all the time, right? Watching us attack other nations, watching them attack us. And what I would realize kind of implicitly was that it's the invisibility that allows the nation state adversary to succeed. They can do the reconnaissance, they take their time, they build infrastructure. And because they are invisible, you know, that is the typical, they would do the work to have greater visibility than the defenders. That's what empowered them for the long term. And so I thought about that. And that's why the kind of early in the controls, the focus is all about visibility, because that was a kind of a gut reaction. And the more I thought about it, I said, yeah, that was actually, that's about right. it made sense. But that's really where you start, right? The difference between, and again, when I was not thinking about this comprehensively, to me, all respect to Sean and to you, Scott. Oh, configuration management. That's that cranky board that I send requests into, and maybe 3 months later, they turn down my request for a new piece of software. You know, I thought of it as kind of a static, you know, cumbersome bureaucratic process. But that's not what you're talking about at all, is it, Scott? Right. So how do we go from this sort of like static view of visibility and configuration management to really the machine that you talk?
Yeah, really good insights. And it's a challenge. I mean, you know, the stuff's not easy. And kind of to the earlier point, there's a lot of descriptive, you know, we can get enamored with compliances and frameworks, but methodologies are really kind of more what matter. And it's kind of getting yourself on a path to progress over perfection, as we like to say. So we're looking at first, and as I go into, you know, refer to my book, you know, my third chapter is the efficacy of IT processes. And so I believe organizations should circle back. Many organizations have great policy and procedure that lives in a document that people can get access to that they never read, and that's never actually implemented, and there's no practical way. So I think back to your point, we start with the foundational controls, right? And so you can't really, you know, control what you can't measure. And if you don't know your configurations and you don't know that they're secure, they're in a working, you know, functional state, then you're kind of dealing with snowflake management. And so first we've got to get control and a baseline of configuration. We got to know our assets. We got to inventory them. Of course, in ITIL speak, that then correlates to a configuration management database, as we call the CMDB, which becomes the one of the holy grail pieces, the foundational pieces, because it's going to map all your CIs, as we talk about in ITIL, your configuration items, and it's going to have all the assets mapped out. So that way we know what we have, we know it's secure. Then we kind of electrify the fence, so to speak. Nobody is going to circumvent change on a well-known configuration unless we vet it through proper release and change management. And this is where they become a closed loop process. So good release practices, you know, are we testing things? The simple things. So we can all start there. It's pretty practical for an organization to say, let's inventory our assets. Let's get the baseline. Let's look at the CIS controls. Let's go through some of those basic initial controls that we've got that foundation in place. Let's electrify the fence now. Let's implement change. Let's stop all work in progress that could potentially create downtime and a lack of availability or open up security threats or, you know, potential vulnerabilities. So we start there. And then from there, as we start to look at some basic change practices beyond just release practices, do we classify a change? Is this a regular, everyday, accepted, pre-approved change? It's content on a website somewhere. Fine. But we have other change that could be significant. So are we thinking about the stakeholders? Are we thinking about a forward schedule of change in a maintenance window? Most organizations have some of these practices, but there's not a lot of thought into how they're doing it. They just pick a window, they slap on the change, they aren't really testing it, they don't really have full rollback in place. And so you can get yourself in trouble too really quickly. So I believe that that's where you start. You start with the foundational processes and the science. We kind of, you know, manage by fact and not by belief, as per the studies and percentages I shared earlier. If we do a really good job at those things, we already are making a huge improvement in our IT performance, you know, user satisfaction, you know, all of the good things that come with that, along with the, as I referred to earlier, the idea that now we know that no security breach will happen without a change or a need for a change. So that's a good first step. That's a great way to start. So that's the first thing, is start with the processes. Then to be a little bit more pragmatic, right? Then we start to look at, you know, some of the low-lying fruit around the obvious threat actors and how they tend to breach or, you know, go after networks and cause all of this cybersecurity chaos. So then we go back to, do we really have, you know, good identity and access management in place? And this is where I start to get into the, you know, kind of the buzz of zero trust, which we're a huge believer in. And we've kind of been doing, as I was joking the other day, zero trust before zero trust was cool, But it's becoming really cool now. And it is great. And what we love about the Zero Trust is that it's back to what I was saying, progress over perfection. You can start with a few basic things, applying this least privileged thinking that's been around forever, and just broadening it out across the whole network and saying, okay, who has access to things and should they have access to things? And then we can start to mature along the journey of Zero Trust. And I would caution people to be with the buzz that's out there in Zero Trust. I'm seeing, you know, zero trust in a box and, you know, all these stuff. It's impossible. That if you're seeing that, run fast, because it is a bunch of layers following a methodology, and it takes time and it takes patience. You can't bring your organization to a halt, so you don't want to overreact with it. Some people can't have the expertise and the resources and the budget to do it. So you've got to be pragmatic in how you apply it. But there are certain things that are not huge cost, you know, factors that you can implement right away that start to make huge, you know, huge progress towards starting to get on a zero trust journey.
Yeah, the point in there, Scott, is, I think is critical, right? This sort of, I've often said the pursuit of perfection has actually prevented us from doing a lot of good in cybersecurity, right? Because security wonks like me, no matter what you're doing, will point out the 10 reasons why it doesn't deal with 100% of the problem. But I think that's been backwards and wrong, right? In the sense of when you describe the machinery, what strikes me, and again, having lived inside a nation state attack machine for decades, is that what you're describing, you need to have, no matter how sophisticated or nation state level or how clever the attacker is, you still have this need for visibility, for understanding, right, of your configurations, for management of the change. That is the core infrastructure of defense. Now, you may use it in different ways depending on the nature of the attacker, right? That's the point that you were going down. But if you let yourself get paralyzed by the, you know, the five edge cases or the thing that you can't do, then you never make any progress, right? Then you chase a box, you chase a thing or the next toy. But Sean, this is your life, right? You're sort of composing this mix of sort of technology with business process with, you know, how do I don't get to do it overnight. I have to do it over time, right? So how many of the, I mean, this must resonate with you also. This
oh,
is
absolutely.
The kind of progress that you've had to map out.
Yeah,
for us.
Progress. Exactly. Cause it's, and Scott, you know, we always go with, it's a journey, not a destination, right? We're on this path and it's ever changing. You know, one of the things I reflect on, and Scott, you'd mentioned it as well as, Tony, is, you know, some of the embeddings necessarily in the policy, the procedure and things like that, that's good to map to a best practice approach. But what I say is, well, that is the best practice. Now it's game time. This is the contextual element of baking this into our operations and now looking at threat intelligence. Like you said, you know, that there's so much velocity of change in these environments. You know, what was today is not the same tomorrow. Right. I mean, there's consequences of difference that we need to understand and adjust to over time. One of the big things that you'd mentioned, Scott, that resonates with me and have institutionalized is with change management, there's also a reflection of consequence assessment, because I could come in with a change and take out a whole business unit with that change without understanding the implication. And Tony, it hits back to visibility. If I can't see the effect necessarily this cause and ultimately this effect, there's institutionally, I've made more problems than necessarily I'm solving by not asking questions or understanding operations. And that's really true to the visible ops element. And then it reflects, again, in this space to really sustainment of a process. And Scott, you know, it really... what appeals to me about the approach and with ITIL is that there is an improvement element in order to understand, you know, you're starting necessarily at a foundational level, you know, build maturation over time. And we can adapt to that and integrate into that and see necessarily we face the challenges where, you know, it's not going to be, you know, I'm foundation one and then I'm optimized, you know, in a year. This is a journey, and I see that with Zero Trust as well. There are going to be some things, and you mentioned identity and access management. We can be very, very powerful on the person. We may be missing the device, right? We may be missing the network piece. So we've got great maturity in one, I'll call it one of the five tenants of device, network, app, user, etc., as part of that. So we've got one element here. Then we need to encourage and look at prioritization to see, well, should we maintain that kind of where we are in identity and access management invest, or look at some of these other areas and try to build a capability into those operational pieces. Any thoughts there, Scott?
Yeah, great thoughts, insights. I agree, and it's important. I think it's maybe summarized a little bit in some of the methods that we talk around, shift left, right? This idea that we're going to go farther, you know, upstream to think it, you know, to look at things more that way. So we get into the development practices, or maybe in your particular, you know, in a particular organization's case, it's supply chain. Or, you know, whatever. So we're shifting left about security, or DevOps, DevSecOps, as I talked about before, right? We're really thinking about security. This idea, this security first mindset and thinking becomes pretty foundational. And that should start to spur visibility, as we keep talking about, right? Do we have visibility throughout our IT, you know, assets, and do we understand the implications, right? How are things interconnected? Are we inventoried? Back to kind of some of the ITIL processes, right? Config and change and release. So it's really becomes important how that plays out. And it just, you know, these become pillars, if you will, of, you know, rock solid foundational pieces that you need to think about as you're wanting to kind of get, in a sense, get control of your IT organization. And this idea that leadership, you know, and I speak about this right out from the book, you know, it really does start with leadership. You know, leadership has to not only have the mantra, they got to practice what they preach. They've got to really care, which means we're bringing it to the other leaders. We are talking about, you know, security awareness culture that we're implementing, and not just downstream to apply the shift left, but shift left in the organization. Are we talking to the VPs, the presidents, the CEOs, the boardroom, which is a real buzz right now? Are we getting proper cybersecurity representation in the boardroom or the senior leadership? That's really important, because it all starts there. So to expand on what you're saying, yeah, there's some other additional thoughts there.
Yeah, you know, Scott, that's so important. And you know, I know in the book you identified a number of these, I'll call them cultural changes, right? Sort of rethinking these, because you have to change a lot of things, you know, in an ongoing way. So you have to buy things differently, right? Provision them, assign responsibility. I mean, there's the technical part, the business part, but also the sort of thinking. You referenced in one earlier comment about, you know, sort of changing the mindset from configuration management is a pain for the users. You know, what about the sort of cultural perceptions, right? How could it improve life for users? What would a well-run process machine look like, and how would that affect the way people view IT and the problem?
And keeping perspective on, you know, the users in most organizations, it's, you know, IT is delivered, and security is innate, should be innate. It's water, it's electricity. It just works as it should, right? It should be there. It should be secure. It should be safe. It should. So the idea that you have these big process or these foundational controls and processes in place that we talk about, and particularly mapped to like a configuration management database, when we're triaging, so the, you know, something breaks, something's not right, we are looking at a potential vulnerability or threat, the ability to drill down to the baseline configuration and it from really one pane of glass, in a sense, right? One place, understand the configuration, the DSL, the definitive software library, what software is on there, what version is it, what tickets have been opened on this, what patches have been applied. The ability to bring visibility, right? That's the practical side of it, to any IT asset. You know, even if we've rolled out, you know, patching to workstations, but, you know, we have an RMM tool, but is it mapped to the CMDB? So we can look at visibility throughout the organization all the way down to the last patch or rev that may have been done, or the last ticket that may have been opened, or the replacement of an asset. And I could go on and on. That's the practical implementation and benefit, if you will, to the user organization, is that things are, you know, MTTR, you know, meantime to repair becomes very reduced, and your MTBF, your meantime between failure, your failures are much farther apart, because you're doing such a great job with the visibility all the way down to the very finite degree. And that applies to security as well.
Oh, 100%. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Don't know how to meet the standard of reasonable cybersecurity? Well, you won't get there by putting a fancy lock on the server room door.
Right, Sean. CIS Secure Suite comes with integrated tools and resources for implementing a reasonable cyber defense program.
Now, let's not forget about testing. You can also use a CIS Secure Suite membership to evaluate the reasonableness of your cyber defenses using risk quantification.
And this will help you to comply with U.S. and state data privacy laws and show you've implemented the necessary security measures to avoid liability in the event of a data breach.
And now through April 30th, you can save up to 20% on a new membership using promo code RCD25.
So, want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Well, you need a CIS Secure Suite membership to build and test it.
Visit cisecurity.org/CIS-Secure Suite to learn more.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode.
Yo, Scott, I'm going to reflect on, I think we could do probably a series with each chapter identified. You know, we've hit chapter 5 a little bit. I want to hit the golden thread with culture, but we are coming up to the end of the episode. And so I wanted to get your final thoughts, as well as where can people find you online and your profile, your organization, and all the great work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you for that. And final thoughts in the golden thread chapter really is this idea, you know, certainly not my idea of golden thread, but the concept of golden thread is we're weaving a needle and some thread through these various topics. And I start with leadership, as I referred to earlier in the podcast, right? You know, it starts with leadership and that security first mindset and there. And then, you know, then we kind of roll the golden thread into this idea that we really need to have a philosophical position. And if you don't have one, you need to get one. And I've got some obvious opinions. I think we all do. And we all kind of share the same philosophical position. It's not that hard to find, but you've got to have a philosophy that you're operating from so that you can sell it upstream into management and get everybody on the team in that mindset. But also that philosophy can go downstream. And then we start to roll into the idea that we really do care about the efficacy of IT processes. So we care about those foundational controls that we know matter so much and map to the CIS controls and just kind of, I would almost call the 101 blocking and tackling of IT that you should be following. And in my case, I believe that's a visible ops methodology using kind of an ITIL described to prescribe, you know, config change and release management as a closed loop process. Really important. And what that means to security. Then we kind of roll into this idea of, what really is the methodologies out there and the zero trust. I start to speak about or write about the concepts of zero trust and this idea of progress over perfection and where do you start? And there's some basic tenets within zero trust. If you just grab onto those few things, that's going to give you a huge advantage in your cybersecurity posture. And then I kind of get a little bit into identity access management. You know, MFA is getting fooled all the time. The threat actors are finding out how to hijack it and circumvent it. And so MFA is not really becoming the best, but a lot of organizations don't even have that. So please don't take what I said. You need MFA. We'll take it. It's a start. It's progress. But we really need to work to VCA, which is verified credential access, which is where we're decentralizing authentication rather than centralizing so that the threat actors or have a much harder time to be able to do that. So I talk a little bit about identity access management, VCA, and then I kind of get into this idea of integrity management, the idea that really maps back to everything I'm talking about. Not only does it play so well with zero trust in the way that you're keeping integrity of your network of who has access to what and when, and you know you're in an integrous environment that's secure, but also maps to the change, configure, and release processes. So I speak about the integrity management piece. And then, of course, kind of wrap it up with this golden thread that I'm talking about, where we kind of bring it all together. And so, yeah, the book is out there. It's available on Amazon. It's Visible Ops Cybersecurity. If you type that in, you can go to my website, scottaldridge.com, and you can learn about the book and where to purchase it and some other information about IP services and the IT Process Institute. So welcome people to go check it out. And I really am thankful for the time and opportunity to share with you guys today.
Absolutely.
Great stuff, Scott. And again, I knew the sparks would fly between you and Sean because it's, you know, reading your book, listening to you is very much the same, but this, and you know, just to kind of summarize on your last point there, I mean, this idea of having a sort of a theory of the case for your defense, right? How important that is, because it drives all the thinking about, you know, investment and process management and change and executive view and being able to sort of understand and have a theory behind it that allows you then to turn that into specifics of technology and operations and all that is so important. And our whole industry, right, has been this chase for something, magic, wizardry, the tool, the threat feed that gives us insight that we didn't have before. And it is one of the ironies of the business that we have more information, more technology, more training, more tools to work with as defenders than we've ever had in our entire history. And yet they're more crippling than they are empowering if you have no underlying philosophy here, if you have no sort of theory of defense. So we appreciate, you bringing kind of all those ideas together. And again, we, as you can tell, we are a security company at CIS, right? A nonprofit security company, but we're also a complicated modern IT company. And so Sean's job is to, number one, keep our reputation intact and our business, thriving by integrating these kinds of ideas. So it's wonderful to have that. So, Sean, I could picture you guys just running off and having your own series of discussions around this. And Sean, let's talk about what might be next with our new friend here, Scott.
Absolutely. I mean, Chapter 7, we've got a lot to talk about there.
Look at you.
We've got, there's the advanced security strategy with the verifiable credential authentication. No.
Gotcha. We'll come back, Olive.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Scott, thank you again so much for being part of the show. And your contribution, I think, is huge in this space with the book. I think it's another part of the path that people need to, one, understand. And I think even reading it, and I wanted to show my copy on screen, but I was reading it last night. There is a practical element here that is rethinking certain adages that we've seen in cybersecurity for I'd say the past 10 years. And that there's an approach that can integrate many different, ultimately we'll get to that golden thread because we'll wrap all of these elements to that. I think so important, Scott. So thank you. Really great work. Fantastic book.
Thank you again. I appreciate the opportunity to share and love to continue the conversation if that makes sense.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tony. The host with the most. It's always a pleasure.
Right back at you, Sean.
And thank you to our audience. We really appreciate it. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways on your favorite podcast platforms. Find us on YouTube at The CI Security. Hit subscribe and click that notification bell. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.